I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
You're listening to The Tillage Podcast with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello everyone, I'm Stephen Robb and you're all very welcome along to The Tillage Podcast. It's currently Wednesday the 13th of April 2022 and what a big week it has been. Arguably one of the most important Irish Farmers Journal publications in the tillage world is out this week. I am of course talking about Crop Protection magazine, but we've also had some big news in grain markets. Irish green grain forward prices for this harvest have surpassed 300 euro a ton. That's big news in our book, and we're going to have a chat about it. As always, here to discuss this and much, much more, I'm delighted to be joined by my colleagues Andy Doyle and Siobhan Walsh. Guys, before we get into the news of the week, let's have a look at what's been happening around the country. From what I gather, the rain which has fallen in places over the past 7 days has been welcomed by many. Indeed, the rain was being looked for in some places.
Yeah, Stephen, I wouldn't like to say that we were looking for it in North Leinster, but it certainly hasn't done any major harm. A lot of the areas along the east coast have had about an inch of rain, a bit less further south, and of course a lot more in other areas, it's also fair to say. But there was fertiliser out for a while and it was good to get it washed in. And I think a lot of people associate the coming of rain with the general improvement in temperatures, etc. So people wanted to see a bit of rain to try and get rid of the frost, etc. as well. Whether it does or not, only time will tell. Just my being out and about, I think a lot of the cereals would appear to be planted this part of the world. But certainly moving around at the end of last week, there was still a lot of stubble ground from last year there. Some of it only relatively recently sprayed with glyphosate. It's probably destined in that part of the world for spuds, for spuds in particular, but probably south of me, there'd be more beet going in and some maize, etc. And certainly some spring rape, but probably the spring rape has even gone in by now. Not a lot of cereals, spring cereals up yet, or at least there wasn't last week. I'd say a lot of them are peeping through now, but that's kind of where we are.
Yeah, I suppose around this area, yeah, spring crops are well up around here, and people going on with nitrogen now that they can see the tram lines still finishing off bits of nitrogen on some of the winter crops. And spraying seems to be the order of the day this week. You know, we had quite cold weather last week, so people couldn't go with growth regulator or wild oat spray. So, yeah, sprayers are busy this week, people getting on disease spray on winter barley in particular, and yeah, on wild oats and growth reg are priorities there as well. So yeah, things are busy around here. Rain isn't too bad. As Andy said, the little bit of rain that came was probably needed to wash in fertilizer.
Well, look, you can take as much rain from the northwest as you want, because arguably it has not been a good 3 weeks were about less than 50% of the spring crops in the ground up here, and that's for the north. So it is, and along the north coast will be in the exact same boat as that. So same carry on, getting fertilizer out, catching up with spraying. Winter crops are still looking well, despite the rain, albeit timings were just a little bit late with everything because of field conditions. But I guess, guys, just looking at your management notes this week, Andy, some of the key points which growers should be thinking about, really. Nitrogen should be pretty much up to date at this stage, Andy.
Yes, Stephen. We have a lot of crops that are thereabouts either side of first node, certainly some that are past it, but that's the point at which the big growth burst is likely to come, weather permitting, of course. And that's also the time that it's critical to make sure that there's enough nitrogen under the crop to drive the amount of vegetation that's required. Remember that you can handle nitrogen in different ways. Certainly winter barley is probably late-ish for a lot of them for nitrogen, because the crops have that bit more forward. You know, I was in barley crops last week and the flag leaf was coming out. It still wasn't anything more than a foot tall. I'd say there was a bit of growth regulator applied to it because it's very squat and very strong. But that's where they've gone to. And that's the point at which we're past the point at which barley crops would have shed tillers if they didn't have enough of nitrogen on board. I didn't see much in the line of winter barley crops that looked hungry, but I certainly did see lots of wheat crops that looked hungry, and they would certainly benefit from getting their main bit of nitrogen now or very soon, very close to now. So that's a critical one for all winter crops to be getting it.
Siobhan, what are you hearing or seeing disease-wise in winter crops? I would have heard, and particularly actually our own tramline guys, especially this week, tea knots seem to be in fashion amongst them this year, just as a, if nothing more than the holding spray, because of the way that spraying kind of fell this year, clashing with spring cereal planting. What are you seeing on the ground?
Yeah, I was even talking to a farmer this morning thinking of going out with something on their wheat, and yeah, probably because the same farmer, you know, was just saying how difficult it was to get to spray the winter barley. So probably a bit of fear there, you know, they have a chance to spray now and maybe they'll get something on. I think in general, people who have been talking to and crops they've seen are fairly clean, which is good. And look, hopefully, you know, spray that's going out is a preventative measure on winter barley so far. You know, bits of mildew were there earlier on, but I think in general, crops are clean. And as Andy said, winter barley crops, I think are looking smashing really. So yeah, things are looking good in the fields.
On that one, there is a bit of brown rust certainly in some crops. Now, it's unlikely to explode unless the weather warms up significantly. But let's face it, that's probably likely to happen soon. So people would just want to keep an eye on it. It's probable that the vast majority of programs that will be used will hold it. And it's not too difficult to hold it. But if you are a little bit late with a spray and the disease had gotten away before you were actually going into spray, you might need something extra in the tank just to put a quicker set of brakes on that particular disease. So just one to watch out for. There's also a bit of net blotch here and there, and I'm just getting reports back in during the week of yellow rust beginning to reappear in some winter wheat varieties. So again, it's not that you necessarily have it, and if you don't have it, your standard program will look after it. But if it was there, you need to know it, because if you have active disease at the time of spraying, you really need to put something into the tank like a morpholine to try again and stop that disease in its tracks much quicker than the normal triazole SDHI mixes would be capable of doing.
Yeah, where people are fortunate enough to have spring crops sown and had the opportunity to catch up on nitrogen and stuff. I think, you know, over the next few days and the weekend, it's time to be getting out into fields and looking at crops and seeing what's happening.
Okay, good stuff, guys. Look, Andy, you were in the fields literally last week, the end of last week, and you've done a report on that in this week's tillage pages. And indeed, you can read that and much more on the management notes as well. So moving on to the news of the week, and as I said in my introduction, we have some big market news this week, Andy. Grain prices on offer for harvest 2022, which growers can lock into, surpassed €300 a tonne. Explain to us where the offers came from, what the offers were, and the reasoning behind it.
Yes, Stephen, look, we know that the co-ops present forward prices, either green or dry, to their suppliers almost every week. And this week, because there's been a lot of activity in the markets, for the first time, we've seen offers for spring barley at and above 300 euro per ton for green barley for the coming harvest. You know, they're kind of almost unbelievable magnitude of prices relative to one we've ever seen before, and even relative to what I might have expected, trying to judge the market as we went. But look at last week, futures markets rose by 20 euro a ton last week, and they rose by a further 20 euro a ton in the first 2 days of this week. And it's fair to say that a lot of that 20 euro is not even reflected in the price offers of 300 euro a ton, 300 from Glanbia, 305 from Derrygold. But I think it's also worthwhile noting, though, on those prices, that those prices are exclusive of any of the additional payments that the co-ops pay to growers. And, you know, if we compare them with last year, well, then last year's price equivalent was about 200 euro a ton, before they added in the co-op bonuses and the loyalty bonuses, etc. And in that type of scenario, you know, we're looking at a 50% increase in green prices already for this year. Now, it's needed to try and carry the myriad of additional costs that are there. So it's not necessarily that it's giving anybody a bonanza or anything like that. But a lot of people, including myself, wouldn't have been expecting the drive that came into prices both last week and this week. But they're welcome, in a sense, to try and carry the cost. But as against that, you know, our neighbours are our customers, and there has to be some kind of an element of affordability at their side as well, if we're going to turn this into something that's useful for the future in the long term. So, you know, both prices, 305, 300, they both translate roughly to 310 euro a ton in terms of what people who qualify for the payments will be entitled to get. And the industry,
that's for green barley,
yeah. And the industry is already kind of looking at that as where it's going to go. Like, dry barley today is kind of either side of 350. Dry wheat today, sorry, this is for, again, for harvest for November, December, 350, either side of 350, and wheat for then is either side of 360. And those prices are tending to be higher now than the actual market itself, even though the market has actually risen to that level. So I think that we will see physical prices that probably will continue to be ahead of the futures markets as people strive to get their hands on stocks in a market scenario that people are worried that stuff won't be there. Now, it's not a major worry, as I see it. You know, we won't have that much less grain in the world this year, even if we take all Ukrainian production out of the system. Well, of course, it'll be significant, but it's not massive, massive, massive. And there doesn't have to be a big scarcity of grain. But in a scenario where you're dealing with appreciating value of stocks, then it's much more difficult to get those stocks freed up from the people who hold them into the hands of the people who want to use them. And that's where the price lever comes about a lot of the time.
And in a traditional grain market world, or in previous grain market scenarios where wheat and barley would have seen significant increases, the risk was always that we were going to price ourselves out of the market and purchasers would switch to maize because they're more cost effective. Has all normalities, or what we class as normal in terms of market dynamics, being thrown out the window?
The answer to that is probably yes, Stephen, but you still can't ignore the fundamentals of market dynamics, because they always come back at some point. Like, it's interesting, if I look at current maize prices in Chicago, they're kind of running relatively flat since the peak just after the invasion of Ukraine. So they've been kind of up and down, but rather flat, moving sideways since then. But if I look at new crop maize for November, it's continuing to rise since the first week in January this year. So it's just gradually drifting upwards and upwards and upwards and upwards. And that is going to reflect itself in the cost of imported maize. It hasn't yet reflected itself in the cost of maize for that far out into November, December, but it's likely that it will do in time. But in the meantime, maize is available at a price that would look to be relative value in the market as it's currently moving. And a lot of cover has been taken on maize because people can take cover on maize because in the small grain world, we're not selling forward. And for as long as we don't sell forward something, people are locking in their supplies through maize. And, you know, you keep doing that for long enough and all of a sudden the market has been supplied totally by maize and nobody wants wheat or barley. And that's the great difficulty. We've been in that place so many times in the past.
Okay. Well, look, it's positive news. So, and I guess the fear is that, so this is the price now. It's on offer for harvest 2022. Is there any fear that this could slip back in price, or indeed, is there any scope for it to increase any further?
Stephen, the answer to both questions is yes. Of course, there's a possibility it could slip back. There is always a downside in every market. But I would say that on balance, the upside is there and probably the upside is somewhat greater still than the downside. Like as I look at what's happening in futures markets at the moment, as we're speaking on Wednesday, we're looking at... I'm going to use maize first because I just have the maize chart open. I'm looking at maize for harvest running at €816 a ton. Maize in store, if you have it today to sell, running at €987, down slightly. So, you know, these things are happening. They're reflected across all markets. The wheat market today has kind of run flat all day. It closed yesterday evening at €364.50. It's at this point on Wednesday, also still at €364.50. It was up a little, it was down a little, but it kind of has taken the rises of the last 2 days and now it's sitting on them. And in some ways, that's a statement of strength because so often in the past, we've seen 2 days of rises followed by a day of very substantial falls. And indeed, this morning, it looked like that. Before the markets opened today, the bids on offer were lower than the closing point yesterday. That generally reflects a day when prices will fall. It seems to have withstood that and things are kind of generally running on zeros. So in other words, it's a static market in the main today. Could change by evening time, but that's kind of where it is. So, you know, the market is kind of looking at the fact that if it's trying to lever supplies of grains into the future, that it reckons it's going to have to try and buy them at these type of price levels or even more.
Okay, Andy, thank you for that. So that's on the feed grain end of things. Siobhan, if we look at the premium grain end of things, and look, we're talking about our largest premium grain grown in the country, that's being malt and barley, and specifically our largest maltster in the country, Bort Malt. Do we have any indication of where malt and barley price is currently at and where it's going to go for harvest 2022?
No, we don't, Stephen. Simple answer. Don't have access to the FOB Cradle price. And look, this has been a bone of contention with malt and barley for a long time now. So just, I suppose, for a recap for listeners, Bort Malt's harvest price is usually based on, well, since 2019, the IFA and Bort Malt agreed that the harvest price would be based on the average FOB Cradle malt and barley price. So that's a French free on board price for Planet malt and barley. The average price over from the middle of April, so week 15 to week 38 each year, and the price that was taken for the average was the price at the close of business on a Wednesday of each week. So I suppose, look, growers did get fixed price offers from Bort Malt in November and February, so they could fix up to 40% of the barley that they intended to grow at prices of €250 a ton and €270 a ton. But since then, I suppose, look, we've been trying in the Farmers Journal to get access to that FOB Cradle price. It's quite a small market and it's hard to get access to it. We've asked Bort Malt for that price on numerous occasions. You know, we've got access to it in other years, I suppose, you know, through the IFA. But at the minute, we don't have access to the price. It's now week 16, and we don't know if averaging has started. I suppose last year it started in week 16 as well, you know, despite the fact that it was week 15 to week 38 was agreed. So maybe it's starting this week. Maybe the first price is the price from the close of business today, but we're unsure. The IFA, as far as I understand, have yet to meet Bort Malt on this. And So basically, yeah, growers are in the dark on where that price is. And we're in a week now where, you know, Andy's telling us about all these great prices that are coming out from Glanbia and Dairy Gold this week. And I suppose there's competition there from the feed market now for those malt and barley prices.
Well, I mean, for a grower who has done the right thing in a normal year and hedges bets or her bets and forward sell at available opportunities, so they could have potentially 40% of their contract or tonnages sold at an average price of 260 euro when green harvest prices of 310 euro are on offer.
Yeah, I suppose, look, a lot of people have done that with feed as well. So, you know, people would have sold barley, you know, when it was back at 200 or 210 or wherever it was. So I suppose the big issue here is, you know, that they've kind of been left not knowing where the price is now. Where do they go next, I suppose. And like Bortmalt have the capacity to take in 180,000 tons of barley each year, so they're our biggest monster. And I suppose just to clarify as well, we don't know where the price is for Glanbia or Dairy Gold either, but it's much smaller tonnage you know that's being dealt with there. And I suppose growers supply their feed barley to those places as well.
So Bortmalt just haven't replied to us. Let's call a spade. And the IFA, do we know, do the IFA actually have the prices, or are they in the dark as well and they're just keeping it from growers?
I don't think they know the prices, Stephen. Look, the IFA, in fairness, you know, they tell people if they knew the price.
But it was an arrangement agreed between the IFA and Bortmalt.
Back in 2019, now, this was first agreed, yeah. So I suppose, like, you know, generally it's reviewed every year and everything. And, you know, it just kind of starts at week 15 or week 16, as it was last year. So, this year just seems to be on the long finger. And maybe it's as a result of what's going on in markets at the minute. People are unsure. But I think farmers need clarity on where they're going. And particularly, I suppose, for malt and barley, like nitrogen is going on to crops now. Especially in those malt and barley areas, you know, in the southeast of the country, there's nitrogen going on to crops. And I suppose people need to be sure of their final market before they put the final bits of nitrogen onto those crops.
Yeah,
it's perhaps like ironic that the original deal that had been in place before the one that's based on Fob Creel, which was based on Matif milling wheat, and people argued that it had no bearing on the malting market, and that was technically correct, but at least it would be prepared be giving a lot more transparency in terms of what's been happening in the last 2 years, that people could see exactly what was going on and what was happening, because the lack of transparency in the Fob Creel is a very definite negative for everybody in the equation.
Yeah, I think that, and that's the major problem with it, the fact that you can't just look it up. You know, and yeah, farmers complained about that Matif, but at least we knew the Matif and we could look at it on our phones every day. We had access to the Fob Creel for a while. There was one app that had it and it disappeared. So, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head there, Andy. If there was transparency, and even if just that price was coming out every week and people knew where it was, the fact that we don't have a clue where it is.
It's not going to change. With the exception of the guys who might decide to grow feed, it's not going to change anything, really. It's just going to put growers in the loop of where the market's at.
Put them at ease, I think, as well. I mean, we had Chagas come out today and say that tillage incomes are expected to be down 25% on 2021. You know, people need to know where their prices are heading for and be able to do their books and plan ahead.
Yeah, look, communication is key, I think, is the message from this segment. Look, we'll move on, and Siobhan, I'm going to stick with you because we had some positive developments on the tillage incentive scheme. Just inform us of what broke this morning.
Yeah, so really good news on the tillage incentive measure. So I suppose we've talked about that measure a number of times on the podcast, and when we spoke about it last week, there was an issue with it that farmers who had increased their area of protein taken a good decision to increase their area protein and reduce their fertilizer use. If farmers had done that and then ploughed up grass in the hope of getting the €400 per hectare payment in the tillage incentive measure, so to plough grass and then plant a cereal, oilseed rape, maize or beet, if they're the area that they increased on their protein would cancel out some of their payments. So let's say they planted 5 acres extra of protein and they ploughed up 10 acres of grass, they'd only get paid on the 5 acres of grass. So the protein would have took away five of the acres. So farmers who are in that position now, the department have resolved that issue in the scheme, and those farmers will now be paid for both. So they'll get their protein payment on the protein areas. I suppose that was one of the issues with it, that was kind of seen as a double payment. But so now they'll get the protein payment on their beans, provided the protein isn't planted into grass, and then they'll get paid for the land that they ploughed and planted into either barley, wheat, oats, maize, beet or oilseed rape. So a really, really positive outcome from that. And like, maybe this won't affect a whole lot of farmers, but the farmers who it did affect, it's very positive for them. And, you know, it's good that the department have made the change, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's probably something that was never really meant to happen as such, but in following the legal requirements, this was a quirk in the system that arose. And, it I would have said it would have hit a lot of people by surprise. And we'll all kind of say, well, fair play for getting it sorted out so quickly. It doesn't.
Yeah.
It probably won't change the decisions that anybody can make at this stage, one way or the other. But at least the people who did make the move are not going to be penalised for having done what was being asked of them, which was to try and increase the overall area of tillage using the incentive that was put in place.
And I suppose that scheme had been criticised, you know, that it wasn't for the specialist tillage farmers. So those specialist tillage farmers who were being hit by this, you know, it's now been resolved. So that's a positive.
Absolutely, guys. Okay, good stuff. We'll move on to some more news which broke this morning, and that is news of the horticulture package, which is coming. So this morning, Amy Ford, our colleague, revealed that the Minister of Agriculture, Charlie McConnell, is seeking cabinet approval for a €3 million fund for horticulture and vegetable growers. High wire growers such as cucumber and tomato farmers, as well as field vegetable, mushroom and apple growers, will also be able to apply for the support. Currently, there are no details of this scheme or the level of payment per farmer. So in terms of funding, it's understood that the funding for the horticulture package, it's also an updated pig package as well, will come from the €15.8 million euro EU crisis reserve funding, which Ireland is to receive. And that further funding and supports for livestock have not been rolled out. Ireland can co-finance the fund by 200%, which would bring the fund up to almost €48 million euros. However, no decision by the government has been made on whether or not they're going to match fund yet. Look, we won't dwell on this just yet. We'll wait until a little bit more details of the package comes out. All I'm going to say is €3 million euro sounds pretty light for such a large sector and such an input intensive sector and energy intensive sector. But we'll wait to see what the T's and C's are first. Elsewhere, we have a lovely feature on sustainability pages this week from our other colleague, Darren Carthy. He's featuring a mixed and integrated sheep tillage and beef farmer. Really good example of how a cross-sectoral enterprise can work and work really well. So, guys, we're going to move on now onto the big one, and that's Crop Protection Magazine. Andy, you've been working on this for many months. It's a combination of a lot of work, and it's also a vital tool, we'll say, for every grower in the tillage industry. What are we expecting in the publication this year?
Well, Stephen, in many ways it follows a format which is to look at the kind of the different pressures that are in the industry and potential improvements that are in the industry for the year and stroke years ahead. Unfortunately, we've no new actives anywhere in the system to report this year. We would expect that we would see hopefully at least one more next year, maybe more than one. And that they all become good news in terms of helping to protect one another in the fight against resistance for disease control. So we have an update on resistance status in wheat and barley crops. And while the bulk of that conversation space always falls into Septoria, we're leaning a little heavier on net blotch, because net blotch is becoming an increasing worry for the current family of fungicides, particularly across Europe and maybe mainly in other parts of Europe. But what they get, we get sooner or later. So I need to kind of look and see what's going on there. We're also looking at some of the new developments that are taking place. We're all very conscious of the pressure to decrease pesticide usage by this theoretical 50% by 2030. That can only be done in the presence of alternative tools. So we're asking the question as to what some of these tools do, biopesticides, biostimulants, biofertilizers, etc., and try to put definitions on them, just so that people can know what's what and what it might be expected to do. And interestingly, from the way it's being said, any of these things coming to the market, the bulk of them will require certification. And for to get certification to be sold, they will also have to have proof of benefit. That's something that is potentially useful. But we see a lot of chat, or I see a lot of chat within Europe about the need to free up the whole registration system to get more biologicals into the market quicker and faster and at a lesser cost to make it more attractive to suppliers, which is technically a potentially good thing. But if those things are not capable of working in field type situations, then they're sweet shag all good to the majority of farmers in the country. And that's the really big problem. The biologicals are reasonably proven to work in confined spaces, indoor settings, that type of stuff. But field performance is more difficult. Mm-hmm. But there are biologicals that do appear to be working in the field, doing other different things, maybe other than pest control. And, those things are good also in themselves. So look, at Rome wasn't built in a day. This is a relatively new science that will take time to get it into its particularly useful phase. But any little bit of proof that they are working is at least an encouragement to keep pushing in that direction. We then look at a little bit about blight, because blight's a disease. OK, it's not a cereal crop, but it certainly has caused potato growers an awful lot of difficulty. And there's been a huge amount of fungus evolution over the past couple of decades. And Stephen Kildare kind of gives us an understanding of what that is, an understanding of the fact that some of our long serviced or long used blight fungicides are now running into trouble as well. And we need to be conscious of that. But luckily, there's a lot of different families still in the market that can help to alleviate the problem. Another article is looking at the development of resistance to herbicides in Italian ryegrass. It's not the biggest problem that we have in the country, but once resistance becomes part of its physiology, then anything that's a potential problem could very quickly become a much bigger potential problem. And kind of the warning is that for grass weeds in general, no matter which grass weed it is, zero tolerance is the best approach for any farmer to take towards them.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent. And Siobhan, you're contributing to this year's publication as well. You have a piece on glyphosate.
Yeah, I suppose glyphosate is up for renewal again on the 15th of December this year, 2022. So we kind of have a timeline in there just to, describing what's been happening and what will happen up to that date, and just a bit of a background on why it's used in Irish agriculture. So yeah, just I think it'll be it'll inform people of what's going on and what's involved in that registration process.
Stephen, we've one other article, Stephen, just in passing, and it's I think particularly interesting, so I kind of left it out until the end, and that's one on aphid and BYDV control. But I think it's revealing in very many ways, because we kind of looked at barley yellow dwarf virus as a single disease, and this is kind of suggesting that no, it's not. That there's a CYDV phrase appearing in it for the first time, which is cereal yellow dwarf diseases, which is a combination of different diseases and different strains of the disease that show different symptoms and can have lesser or greater overall effects on yield. And it's something that the current research is looking to try and throw some light on, which of these might we be able to ignore? And it's kind of coming in as part of the modern technology that they're using for research in Chagas, looking at DNA, and also because we have the towers there, so we can look and see not only if aphids are flying, but when they're flying, what if they're carrying virus and which virus they're carrying, and therefore what risk does that present to crops, and does that present a need or show a benefit from intervention by spraying aphids? So look, it's terrific the way the direction research is traveling on some of these areas.
Yeah, but you also have an article in this week's this year publication from an agronomist point of view.
Yes, look, at one of the things that we're kind of very conscious of is that a lot of the way research is developing is that it's evaluating the contribution of individual actives or products at single timings across a season. And that's not the way advice goes. You know, advice will feed into the use of products at all three major timings or two major timings, depending on the crop. So, you know, where do agronomists assemble the information that they use to give advice to individual farmers to use on individual varieties or different parts of the country? And it's interesting to see how at least one company is going about trying to assemble that information and to generate its own information to service its own agronomists in particular parts of the country. So, yeah, it's interesting to see that happening, because there was a time when we had a lot more of the full disease program evaluation, but that's much less the case nowadays. So we're looking at single treatments, more than one treatment in the season, but the effect of single treatments. And that's not what agronomists and farmers need to know on the ground. So somebody has to generate that information as well.
Absolutely. And of course, you have the updated pesticide tables on what products are available to growers this year.
Yes, indeed. And you know, we've lots of things drop off since last year because of the fact that a number of actives, particularly things like epoxiconazole, is gone. So there was a huge number of products in which it was sold as a sole ingredient or as a co-formulant, and they're all gone. There's plenty other new ones in as well, but I'd say on balance, we've had about 50% new products come into the market, not new actives, just new variants of similar actives or similar mixes of actives. But the table is getting, it's easier to make it fit on the page. That's probably the best way to say it. And the same for all tables.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Andy, that was a great preview, but there's much, much more to be seen in this year's publication. So that is Crop Protection Magazine, that is free in this week's Irish Farmers Journal newspaper. So to finish up, Andy, I'm going to stick with yourself. What are Med Éireann saying weather-wise for the coming week?
Well, Stephen, you told a tale of woe for your local conditions at the start of this podcast, and I'm afraid the forecast is not going to offer you a lot of change on that.
I feel that that's becoming a normal with this podcast, me giving out about the weather up here.
Yeah, and look, there's nothing in the forecast that says that you're going to get another great week in the week ahead. That's not what the forecast is saying, either for the northwest or the southwest or the west. Other areas probably going to see more in the line of a number of days, possibly without rain or very little rain, perhaps so little rain that would make no difference to what you would want to do. So that's it. There's two wet days in the forecast for the next seven. One of them is Sunday, where there's obviously something crossing the country overall, where we're looking at something in the order of between 4 and 60 in mils, depending on where you are in the country. And the same then for next Wednesday. At the moment, it's forecasted a wet day across the country. Most other days are a mix of dry areas and wet areas. That could mean you'd be very lucky, and it could mean you would be somewhat unlucky. And that's just the look of the draw in what is normal, broken April weather. Interestingly, you know, winds are still high at times, particularly around the weekend, Sunday, Monday, but much lower than they were in the forecast for last week. So there may be opportunities, if you can get a bit of dry, to get some spraying done over the next week. And it's interesting, I think, particularly interesting to look at temperatures, because we're looking at temperatures given for, say, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 15, 17, 16, 15. But then next week, dropping back again, 12, 11, 11, with nighttime or minimum temperatures into next week running at 0, 3 and 2 degrees again, from the likes of 7s and 8s and 10s for the remainder of this week. So, you know, things are not, it's not exactly summer yet, probably is the way to say it.
Okay, Andy. Look, thank you for that, as always. And there, we're going to have to leave it for another week. So from Andy, Siobhan and myself, Stephen Robb, thank you all very much for listening and happy Easter.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.